Shovel or a pick.
In a mine, in a mine, in a mine, in a mine,
where a million diamonds shine. We dig, 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 from early on till night. We dig, 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 dig up everything in sight.
We dig up diamond piles more, a thousand will be sometimes more.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hi-ho, hi-ho.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a very special start of a new series of Pop Goes the Classics here on the PTBN Pop Feed. I'm Andy Atten, and tonight I'm being joined by two of the bigger Disney fans here at Place to Be Nation, and we're going to start with the beginning of the animated classics, that is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs from 1937. But before we get into that movie, let me introduce those two special friends. First of all, she is one half of Geek and Sassy over on The Jenny Position, and she's often heard on other shows with me like Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Pop Goes the Movies, Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Andy?
I'm good. Thank you for getting together with me for this series.
Of course. It's always fun when you and I get together for a pod of some sort.
And also joining us, somebody I don't get to podcast with nearly enough. He is also a big Disney fan, a Disney expert. He's going through his own watch with his boys right now. So I thought he'd be the perfect third man in the booth with us tonight, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good, Andy. I'm excited about this new series. And the one thing I definitely needed in my life was another new streaming service. So Disney Plus came on at the right time.
Right.
I know it's been a blessing and a curse, I guess, so to speak. You know, I look at all my as we've talked about on other shows, and Jenny likes to make fun of me with my snow globes, but I am a collector. I'm a big Disney fan. I have a big, you know, the big $50 snow globes they used to sell at the Disney store. I have DVDs. I have figures. Everything. I'm just a big time nerd. So Disney Plus is like, yeah, that kind of made that stuff obsolete, and I can get everything at my fingertips. It's like I had mixed feelings, but I'm very happy to have this service.
I think, though, you well, the three of us may be like some of the only ones at Place Spanish. I know a lot of people got Disney Plus, but we may be, because I know you did, AA. We got the special deal because we have been Disney members of some sort of tier club for like so long.
Yes, I have D23, so I got the 3 years for $147, something like that. It was like a year free.
Yeah,
plus, I just got a new phone, so I have a year from Verizon, so I got to figure out how to put that. So I may not pay.
It's super simple. I'll walk you through it.
I may not never have to pay for Disney Plus again. Who knows?
Yeah, I've got it for 4 years. Also, I got it through the Disney Movie Club, and I think you mentioned, Chad, did you get it the same way? You got a special deal?
I'm through Verizon, so
got a special deal.
Yeah. All right, so basically, the genesis of this was kind of like, you know, Chad has been posting on social media about his watch, and Miranda and I get together quite often, and we review the new movies, but, you know, we wanted to kind of, we don't get a chance to talk about these older animated movies as much. I mean, I mentioned a little bit when I did the Pop Goes the Movies, Lion King, and Aladdin, but I really didn't get to dive deep like I would love to. And Scott Criscolo did a very great series back in October for our little horror month of the Pop Goes the Classics. He talked about the Universal horror monsters, icons, Dracula, Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Invisible Man, etc. And I thought, you know what? I want to do a series like that, and I think I know the subject, and guess what? I know the people I want to do it with, so I'm grateful that you guys are along for the ride.
Of course. Thank you for having us.
It's exciting.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about 1937 Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, the first full-length animated feature released by the Walt Disney Company. Actually, it was produced by Walt Disney and released by Archeo Pictures. It was based on a German fairy tale by the Brothers Grimm, and it was the Nine Old Men, I think, worked on it, and it premiered at the Carthay Circle Theater on December 21st, 1937, followed by a nationwide release on February 4th of 1938. It earned $8 million during its initial run, record of the highest grossing sound film of at the time. And then it was re-released several times. It actually was nominated for Best Musical Score at the Academy Awards in 1938. And the next year, Walt Disney, the producer of the film, was awarded an honorary Oscar. It was a very unique award, consisting of one normal-sized award plus seven miniature Oscar statuettes, and they were presented to him by Shirley Temple.
That's so cute.
Yes, it's adorable. It is. So let's talk about the plot quickly. If you, everybody out there knows, for the most part, is familiar with this. But Snow White's a lonely princess living with her stepmother, a vain queen. Queen worries that Snow White will be more beautiful than her. So she forces her to work as a scullery maid and asks her magic mirror daily, who is the fairest one of all? For years, the mirror always answers the queen, pleasing her. But one day, magic mirror has a different answer, and that Snow White is the fairest in the land. The jealous queen orders her huntsman to take Snow White to the forest and kill her. And for proof, she demands that he returns with Snow White's heart in a jeweled box. However, he brings him out there. He can't bring himself to kill her. He begs for her forgiveness, revealing the queen wants her dead and urges her to flee into the woods. Never look back. So she's lost. She's frightened. She runs away. She comes across a cottage. She thinks it's orphan children. It turns out to be seven dwarfs, known as Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleazy, Bash, Sleepy. I combined Sleepy and Sleazy. Sleazy. No, that was one. That was something else. That was a wrestling thing. Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleepy, Bashful, Sneezy, and Dopey, who work in a nearby mine for diamonds. She awakes. She goes there. She starts cooking. She falls asleep. The dwarves come in and wake her up. They introduce themselves. They all get along. Meanwhile, the queen then discovers that Snow White's alive. When she sees her in the mirror again, and then she decides to create a poison apple that whoever eats it goes into a sleeping death, a curse that can only be broken by love's first kiss. But it's certain now that Snow will be buried alive because she thinks that the dwarfs will think she's dead. So she becomes transforms herself into a gross kind of like witch kind of looking thing. She goes out to find Snow White. She fakes a heart attack. The queen tricks her into bringing her to the cottage to rest. She fools Snow White into buying the poison apple. Snow White falls asleep. The queen now proclaims she's the fairest of land. The dwarves return with the animals, and they chase the queen off, and they give chase, and she's on a cliff, and she ends up trying to roll a boulder over them, but before she can do so, lightning strikes the cliff, causing her to fall to her death. The dwarves then return to their cottage and find Snow White seemingly dead, being kept alive in a death-like slumber by the poison. Unwilling to bury her out of sight in the ground, they instead place her in a glass coffin trimmed with gold in a clearing in the forest. Together with the woodland creatures, they keep watch over her. A year later, a prince who had previously met and fallen in love with Snow White learns of her eternal sleep and visits her coffin. Saddened by her apparent death, he kisses her, which breaks the spell and awakens her. The dwarves and animals rejoice as the prince takes Snow White to his castle. The end. So, that's a quote to not take away from another movie, but a tale as old as time. So, let's kind of go around. Like, do you guys remember seeing this movie, like, as a child, like at home on VHS or whatever, Miranda?
I remember seeing it really, really young. I don't remember how my grandmother made it happen, or maybe it came on TV once, and my grandparents would record things off of TV. So it was prior to it going to, like, home video, I think. And so she was the first princess. I don't remember there being any more out just yet. Maybe Cinderella at this point. But I watched it, like, repetitively.
Mm-hmm. Chad, did you remember watching this as a kid?
Yeah, I watched this quite a bit on the VHS tape. And also, like Miranda mentioned with her grandparents, my grandfather was born in 1929 and grew up in a big sense of poverty. And one of his memories that he talks about from his childhood is going to the movie theater and actually seeing Snow White. So that always carried a lot of nostalgia for him. So that was a movie from that time he was familiar with, and he really enjoyed the dwarf. So I would watch it a lot with him as well.
That's amazing to be able to, you know, he shared a lot of good stories about that, because at that time, you know, we didn't really have colored movies yet, and we didn't have a lot of talkies either. So to see this color animated talking movie must have blew your mind.
Yeah. He talks about that. I mean, you know, he lived on a farm with his family, and so he wouldn't even actually go into the city town hall. But once in a while, you know, a few times a year. So he talked about, like, it was an event where him and a couple of his older brothers went into town hall, and they were able to watch Snow White. So that was a big happening, a big eventful day for them. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. My family was the same way. Like, my grandmother was a little bit younger than your grandpa. She was born in 42, but it's the same thing. Like, you only went into town for certain times. I grew up on a farm, you know, in poverty. So it's really kind of endearing to hear that their stories of, you know, seeing something like this.
Right.
Yeah. I don't remember my family really watching these as kids, because, you know, they're from the Bronx, my parents. I don't know how much Disney was shown in the Bronx at the time. Yeah, we're the city mice to your country mice, I guess. So, and then you've showed it now. We're all parents here. And I've shown my kids. My son was on it. My daughter, you know, is a girl. She loved it a lot. We showed it to her as a little kid. She actually, for the show, she joined me in my rewatch. Miranda, what's Caden's thoughts on this this movie?
We watched it a bunch when he was little, and then so at school they're only allowed to watch things that are rated G. So, like, we've watched this on the bus when we went to DC, and just at different times. And I've noticed at different times in his life he'll be like, no thanks, but he'll like catch him singing the songs and stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like a nostalgia, like he does like it, but, you know, he's a 13-year-old boy now, and he doesn't want to admit maybe that he likes it, so.
He's actually at that period where, like, you know, it was cool when he was little, now he's at that stage it's not cool, but then when he's a little older, maybe has kids of his own, then it's going to be cool again, so.
Pretty much, that's kind of what I think, pretty much.
Now, Chad, we mentioned this at the top of the show, that you're going through a watch, and your boys are young, your little ones. So,
yeah.
What was their reactions now when you started doing your chrono watch? Was this the first time they had seen it?
Yeah, so I mean, really, we have Snow White on DVD, but DVD had been really phased out in our household the past few years, really since my boys were born. They're 5 and 2 currently, and so really the only exposure they had with Disney movies was mostly what aired on Freeform. Mm-hmm. And Snow White was a rare showing on Freeform. So I don't think I ever actually DVR'd it. So I'm pretty sure the first time they ever saw it was when we watched it after getting Disney Plus. My 5-year-old, he did pretty good with it. He mainly liked the dwarves. It took a while for him to get into it. You know, he wasn't really into the huntsman stalking Snow White and all that. But once the scenes from the mines happened, and he was also familiar with the ride from Disney World because he'd ridden that as well. So I think that was a good familiarity point for him. Now, my 2-year-old, I always find it interesting what he's drawn to at that age. And you know, he didn't last.
You just never know when they're two. You just never know.
He didn't make it, so he was off to the races and doing something else while me and Caden watched it. But Caden enjoyed it, I think, for the most part. You know, certainly not one of his favorites. So, you know, after the fact, like if we're just we usually end up watching a little bit of TV before bed most nights, and it's usually not one that's called upon, but I don't think he'd be opposed to it if I suggested it.
It's not near the top of a lot of people's lists, but it's also kind of like the legacy of it, though, that, you know, you go back to. And the dwarves, you know, what's funny is I wish I would have timed it when the dwarves come in. It's interesting to see, like, you know, if a young child has to sit through so much till, like, the thing that really will catch their attention comes on screen. It's like amazing, like, because I did this for like Aladdin, you know. It's like it's. Do you know off the top of your head? Do you have any idea when the genie first shows up in the movie Aladdin?
It's when they. It's not until he rubs the lamp. So I'm gonna say it's a good 15, maybe 20 minutes in. I could be wrong.
All right, Chad, what do you say?
Yeah, I think it may actually be even further than that, because you got Aladdin actually going into the pyramid or whatever. That's so I'm going to say about 25 minutes, yeah.
I believe it's 50 minutes.
Oh, that's insane. Yeah, wow.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I think I was like, one time I was watching it, probably one of the movies I've seen the most out of any movie, and I think I just was looking at the timer on like the VCR or whatever I was watching it on, and I was like, wait, 50 minutes? The genie doesn't show up for 50 minutes in this movie? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, it's interesting to some of these older movies to see that one, you know, movies have inciting incidents, but you need that, like, what's the thing that's going to draw the kid
in? Draws them, what pulls them in and engages them.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of kids, though, as I was watching, I was taking notes and stuff. So, you know, this is a dark movie at times, you know. I mean,
well, the original Grimm Tale is even darker, so.
Well, most of them are. And they did, and the dwarves didn't have names in that one. You know, so the queen, she orders a hit, basically, and wants evidence. You know, it's like we're watching a mob movie.
And
go ahead.
Let me remind you, Snow White technically is supposed to be 14. Like, if you look it up, she's notated as being, she's 14.
Wow. So.
And in the Grimm Tale, she's 7. So this queen is something else.
Yes, that's the term "evil queen" is very apropos for her. But you know, it's kind of like as I'm watching it. So as I said, the Disney nerd, I love that the usage of the multiplane camera. I'm sure, hopefully you guys know what that is if you're big animation fans. If you don't, I can briefly explain for the listeners. Basically, it was invented by Walt Disney, and it was a way to show depth is the easiest way to explain it in animated movies, where it's like, you know, the camera is facing down on several slides, I guess. One slide has, like, you know, the sky. One side has the castle. Another one has, like, the rocks. Another one has the bushes, layers. The animals. It's layered. And then, you know, the camera goes up and down, and you can move the slides and all that. So it kind of shows a depth of feel that you don't get with just drawing on a page. So when I watch these older movies now, I kind of look for that. Well, I'm like, where's the multiplane camera? I could see it, and you could just tell the depth of field, and it just blows your mind for this being 1937.
Yeah, I think that's, you really can't talk about Snow White without talking about some of the technical achievements and the fact that it was, you know, the first animated feature-length film, and some of the technological advances at Walt Disney at the time, and kind of, you know, how much you relate to that is how much really Walt did leverage his whole company on Snow White's success or not. I think some of that has kind of went into lore, like, you know, like with Vince McMahon and WrestleMania 1, that type of ideology. But, I mean, it certainly was a risk for him to present this. So it's an amazing achievement, if nothing else. And I think it's one of those things where, even, again, if you're not necessarily entertained by the movie now, just because it's a movie from 1937 and does have some slow parts, you can certainly at least respect the innovation that went into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not to go on a side thing about Walt, but there's many times that Walt basically risked everything to innovate and to create. So he should, if you're ever out there and you want to do something with your life and you want to take risks, you mean just read the anything about the man, any books or anything, because you know he gambled. I mean, not every gamble is going to pay off, but right. Walt just had the foresight and the belief in what he was doing to achieve his goals. So it's, you know, one thing also I noticed is very stage play like, you know, kind of like you kind of feel like you could be watching this in a theater and sets are coming on and off kind of the way they set the scenes up kind of thing, you know, especially the, you know, when Snow White escapes to the forest. I thought that, you know, she breaks some laws. She breaks and enters and trespasses, which is kind of funny. But then, you know, you get the intro of the dwarfs, which I think is one of the best of the minor characters in any film. Basically, you know, you have them in there doing their thing in the diamond mine, and that classic shot of them walking across the log while singing "Hi Ho," just
yes. I love that.
Mm-hmm. It's iconic. So so what's everybody is probably is going to say Dopey, but which are your favorite dwarfs? Would you say?
Well, I have a couple, and Dopey's not my favorite. My absolute favorite actually is Grumpy. I think just from a comedic standpoint, mm-hmm. and sort of the hard, you know, the guy that's really thick-skinned on the outside, but deep inside does have a heart that mm-hmm. you really saw transform throughout the movie, where, you know, he just didn't want somebody kind of impeding on his space, but eventually can't resist like the sweetness of Snow White. And so I thought that was he certainly had some of the most growth of
he actually has a character movie. Arc.
Yeah, he actually does have an arc throughout. And then I've always kind of, I don't know why, but I've sort of assumed Doc was kind of like one of the leaders of the gang, maybe like the older brother. So he's always kind of been one of my perennial favorites of the dwarfs, too.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what about you?
I would just like to say that I have felt connected to all of these at a different point in my life now that I am an adult. when I was little, I loved Dopey. I think that's mm-hmm. common, especially, you know, as a young female. Like, he's just so, like, dopey. I just don't know another word. Like, that's why I thought his name. But as an adult, I sympathize and empathize with Grumpy, and I get that. but my favorite has actually always been Bashful.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's just, like, innocently so sweet. They all are, but, like, he just genuinely is innocently, like, so sweet. Like, she kisses him on the head, and that, like, makes him blush.
Yes. For me, yeah, I mean, Dopey is an all-time favorite. For me, I actually own a Dopey baseball jersey. It says dwarves on the front. I've actually, you know, what's funny is I think if you look at my Facebook profile picture, I'm wearing it, and it's for me and my kids at Disney World and back in 2018. And on the back, I think the number is 0. I'd have to go look at it again. And I wore it in August, and it's cotton. So, at Disney World. But I got to tell you, though, I was stopped countless times. Like, where did you get that jersey? Where did you buy that jersey? I couldn't even honestly tell you. And then I have it somewhere. It does not fit because it's from years ago. But friends of mine who knew me and my ex-wife when I was married brought us back some T-shirts from a trip they took to Disney. And mine was, you know, as of Dopey. And it says, "I'm with Grumpy." And hers was Grumpy. It says, "I'm with Dopey."
Dopey.
So, nice. Yeah, that's a funny story. But, yeah, the dwarves have a legacy, and it's how they all have kind of distinct personalities really kind of adds to the fun of the movie, I think. And then, so what do you think of the music, though, of the movie? Whistle While You Work, Hi-Ho. are they songs like, you know, when my kids were little, I used to play them all the time. Are these kind of the go-to songs that you would listen to?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, Whistle While You Work and Hi Ho are certainly my two favorites. I think the only other kind of big, you know, what was meant to be a Shel Steeler song for the movie is Someday My Prince Will Come. And that one, and just rewatching the movie, to me, felt a little long in the tooth. And it's fine, but it's, as we go throughout this series, it's not going to be like one of my favorite songs, but I would certainly put both Whistle While You Work and Hi Ho in that classic upper tier, you know, that is in the pantheon of some of the better Disney songs of all time.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what about you?
So I totally agree with that statement he made at the end there of like them being part of like the best of all time. I think this musically, visually and everything, but especially musically, set the tone for what you're going to see later down the line and into the music. Because, you know, music in Disney films is like some of the most iconic. There are people that never watch the movie but can sing all the words to various songs. Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of set the stage and brought about like that they're not just cartoonists, that they also can provide that extra bit of, my brain is going dead on the word I want to use, but like that extra bit of entertainment, that music part. And right. I do think that the songs, The Whistle While You Work and Hi Ho, are songs that doesn't matter who you are, you remember. I remember playing them a lot for my Caden when he was growing up. And I remember them being played for me when I was growing up. So I think it's like part of your childhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I you know, one of the things I've always wanted to do, and you know, it's not too late. I've always wanted to get my master's in film, and I wanted to teach film classes to you know, college students, like electives kind of things. And one was going to be on the Disney films. And one subject, I think the midterm, I think, project was going to be around Fantasia. But this kind of goes to, like, any Disney animated film. It's basically they need to find a piece of music and then tell me how they would animate to it. Because, you know, if you watch anyone, I go back to Aladdin, since I've watched so many times, is where I came up with this idea. If you just close your eyes and listen to the song and listen to the instruments telling the story, it blows your mind. It's just the way, like, the song One Jump Ahead from Aladdin. And I did the same thing with these songs. It's just like, you just, in the movie, just the way everything is told. And they kind of talk about that in Fantasia, which we will get to not that long from now. No, but that's like a thing. If you're a fan of just the storytelling in the songs, just, you know, close your eyes one time. I know you're watching the movie, but close your eyes. Just kind of listen to how the instruments are telling the story and how, you know, different characters might have different instruments as well based on their personalities. And then also, you know, Walt Disney was criticized at times for this. There were different animation styles between Snow White and the dwarfs. And also, I noticed when I was watching it on Disney Plus, I noticed the sync was off a little bit. It was maybe just a period of the time and the animation style on Snow White, at least. Did you guys notice that at all, or were you paying that close attention to that?
I do know. I think there's a couple of, like, I don't know the technical term, but I do think there's a couple of guests, like, bad frames.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the movie, where it's not exactly timed right with the animation, but I guess just when you're used to 8 to 10 minute features, and then you move to a 75 minute one, the margin for error is going to be extended a little bit.
It has something to do with the upconvert as well, too. I think so, because you're only catching up somehow, and you're broadcasting in one rate, and you're material is in another rate, and you're trying to kind of, like, you know, meld it as best you can. That's a
right. Okay.
It's almost like it skips. That's probably like the wrong.
No, there's what happens. There's missing frames. There's a certain amount of frames in a second,
right?
And if you're showing it at a different frame rate, there's less frames or more frames depending on which way you're converting it.
Right.
So that can happen. It, you know, happens in my work all the time. So what'd you guys think of the Evil Queen's transformation, though? Like, what do you think of the style of that one?
I mean, besides the dwarves, that's probably my favorite sequence in the movie is her total transformation. Because I think she went from someone that had the appearance of someone very regal and stoic in her Evil Queen get up to just a, you know, ugly hack is what she is. She's the old hack. And just the sequence from when you see the rotted away man down in her lair, and then she boats off in the moat and then persuades Snow White and tricks her and fakes the heart attack, and then you get the final climax. But I really like that, and I think there's a lot of it's very surface level, of course, where you get the basic contrast in good versus evil, but I think it's very presented in like you said earlier, Andy, a dark way. I mean, it is no pun intended, it's pretty grim in the way they portray that. Mm-hmm. And for sure. The hag is pretty demented in her, I guess, I mean, she's just obsessed with Snow White, and I think they did a good job conveying that there was no, I guess there was no limitations in what she would do to extinguish Snow White and get her to eat the poison apple.
Mm-hmm. Miranda, what about you? What did you think of that scene?
I think her transformation is one of the best transformations in Disney. Maybe it was because it was the first. Mm-hmm. So it's very iconic, and remembering, like, when you now people are like fans of Disney villains and you purposely want to meet the villains. Yes. And things. And she started that. She was the beginning of there being a whole, I mean, look, they make live action shows now for kids on Disney Channel that are about the villains. Mm-hmm. So I think she kind of like set that into motion. I always kind of looked at her transformation, because we talk about, you know, Chad just said, you know, she goes from like this regal queen to this like, ugh. I always felt like that was her true, like the person she is on the inside, that bitter, ugly, nasty, horrible person. Because remember, she's trying to kill a 14-year-old child because she thinks she's prettier than her. It's like it came out. It's like, mm-hmm. This is what she would really look like because of the person that she is.
Yeah, what she looks like on the inside is now what she looks like on the outside.
Right. Like, I just always felt like that's what it was. And maybe I'm reading far too deep into that. But that's how I feel about it. It's like when she makes that transformation to trick her, she becomes the person that she really, truly is.
Mm-hmm. All right. So a few more things to talk about. So it took 4 years to make, which is pretty standard, actually. Now I think they make them in about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So, hand-drawn animation, which I dearly miss. I really hope one day Disney does go back to that. But let's kind of talk about the legacy now, since, the lasting images, the products, the theme park rides we've touched on briefly. So I don't remember Snow White's Scary Adventures that well, because it's been a while since I've been on that ride. But, Chad, you, I think, were on it before it closed in Walt Disney World. And kind of talk about that ride a little bit and
yeah, so it was your kind of typical Disney dark ride that basically did a 3-minute version of the movie. Mm-hmm. As you rode along in a little cart. One thing that I liked about the ride was each one of the they were kind of like wooden carts that you would ride in, and in the front they had a carving, and it was a different dwarf's names. So, you know, you could be Doc, you could be Dopey, you could be Bat, you know, just depended on when you rode, which dwarf name you were. But the ride itself was pretty frightening. And it actually came, you know, I mean, this was a dark ride, so it was presented as a kid's ride. But even more than like something like Haunted Mansion, it was presented as with a disclaimer at the front showing that it could be a scary ride. And the main thing that caused that was, as you rode on this ride, you saw the scene where she makes the poison, and they had an effect where the Evil Queen would flip around, like the side of the ride would flip around,
and then you'd be face to face with Hag, like right in your face as you're in the cart, and she'd be holding the apple, and it was pretty terrifying as a little kid. I do remember that. So I mean, it was a fun. I mean, obviously not one of the best rides I've ever been on, but a fun ride, and still is in effect at Disneyland, mm-hmm. so you can still visit it there.
So as somebody that did get to ride the ride, I'm curious, is it like the ones where you do the, like they have one for Frozen now, but they have where you're kind of riding through the movie? Like,
yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I would say Frozen is, I mean, Disney World is tough because they've pretty much extinguished all of them. But I mean, like, you know how like in Peter Pan's Flight, it's not as literal to the movie, but you kind of get the different stages of it.
The main story beats.
You get the main story being told in a and you're in a moving vehicle going through the scenes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it was I mean, yeah, and you could also go on YouTube to watch this if you can't make it out to Disneyland in California. But a ride I have been on and I quite enjoyed was the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Now, Chad, have you been on that one?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. That is one of my 5-year-old's favorite rides. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that was an important ride for Disney, actually, when you look at the history of their theme parks. And because they had announced the expansion for Fantasyland, and they really hadn't had that many new rides since the recession hit in 2008. Attendance was down still, where they just got bombarded between 9/11 and travel going down, and then the recession. There just wasn't that much new stuff in Disney World as far as rides and innovation. And I think that the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train really brought about what you're seeing now with some of the innovative rides like in Pandora and with Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. I mean, I do think that in Tron, which is coming up and already at Shanghai, I think that you could see kind of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train as a predecessor of that of sorts with the rocking vehicles. And it's just a great entry level ride. I mean, it has a few thrills, but I think anybody that's I think it's a great coaster, first coaster for a kid. Mm-hmm. I just think it really hits that sweet spot where, again, it's not going to be my favorite ride, or it's not. I mean, it's not in one of my top 10 in Disney World, but it's the classic ride that has a little more thrills than something like Haunted Mansion or Pirates of the Caribbean, and it's a ride that everybody in the family can enjoy, mm-hmm. Which I appreciate. And my favorite scene from that is also when you go into the mine, and then as you rise up for the big hill, they sing hi-ho, you hear the dwarves singing hi-ho. That's a very kind of high point, I think, of that ride, and it's just a well-done ride, I believe.
And I think part of it, you see the shadows, right, of them walking on the log?
Yes, you see the shadows of them walking kind of up the steps with you as you're climbing up the hill. Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's very cool.
It's a lot of fun, yeah. It's right in the middle of New Fantasy, like you said. I went on it for the first time back in 2018. I wish I hadn't gone on Slinky Dog Dash first, though, because
yes.
I had not, you know, those are a couple of the only roller coasters I hadn't been on yet, but it was enjoyable. I mean, think about it from your boy's age and perspective, that's got to be like the greatest ride ever.
You know, I mean, it's just right tall in enough. That sweet spot, yeah.
but it is a lot of fun because also the Magic Kingdom Park had, you know, has the three mountains, you know, Space Splash and Big Thunder, but then the only other roller coaster I believe it had was Barnstormer, which is kind of like, you know, a very little one with like not a lot of theming, I would think. But, you know, there's a whole story to this. There's, the queue is really detailed. Mm-hmm. I remember, I think I got the front car on this one. You know, I love how sometimes you do get lucky at Disney and you get the front row. And I did get this. And it was a lot of fun. I remember the swaying. We didn't sway a lot when we went, but I think next time we may try to just amp it up a little bit too, because I heard if, you know, you're not going to fall out of the damn thing. So just kind of amp it up a little bit to maybe see if the ride, you know, goes up just another point or something on your scale.
I'm glad you both enjoyed it.
Would you, Miranda, I know you get like motion or headaches or something, but would you, is that something Caden might want to go on if you get there?
So, you guys are Disneylanders. We're Disney Worlders.
No, we're Disney Worlders.
Are you Worlders? Okay. I thought you went to land more. So we went 3 years ago to Disney for Caden's 10th birthday. Mm-hmm. And we're like, so pumped. We're going to ride this ride. We're so excited. He's never been on a roller coaster. Let's do this. We go, like, stand in the queue. Heck yeah. Get up there. Like, get in our cart. Tick, 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 click. Everybody stops. And all the lights go out. And then they're like, we're sorry. Please stay where you're seated. Someone will be around to get you out. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? So then they come get us out. And they're like, follow us, please. We're really sorry. We're going to give you a fast pass to apologize. But the mine train is broke. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And we never ended up, we were there for like 3 more days, but it just like didn't work out for us to go on it. And then I wish that had been Caden's first roller coaster, because this mama made a big mistake of the first roller coaster that she picked for him with someone with sensory processing issues. I made a big mistake. I picked the Mummy at Universal Studios.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe Space Mountain, but that's a
no, I picked the Mummy. I'd never been on it. It sounded really cool.
Oh, the fire, the scarabs. Oh, God.
Yes, if your child is on the spectrum or has any sort of sensory processing issues, do not take them on the Mummy.
That's not the not the ride for you.
Yeah, we've all made mistakes like that. Trust me. When we went to Disney World in 2006, we actually started at Universal, and the first attraction we did was Shrek. And Jessica was just turning 4 at the time. And there's this...
Where the stuff jumps out at you.
Yeah, and they make you think spiders are going under your chair with the blood.
Yes.
So, yeah, that kind of screwed me for a while. Because then she, like, didn't trust me to that. It wasn't going on a lot of stuff. So she got better as the week went along. But, yeah, the next day at Islands of Adventure, she wouldn't even go on the Dr. Seuss ride. She's like, I can't see where it's going. I ain't going on. That's basically what she was saying, Dad. So,
yeah, so I wish it worked out for us to go on the mine train. It just didn't. Things might have been different if it had.
Although I do plan to – I've only been to Disneyland once, actually, when I was about six. We spent a summer out there. With my aunts who lived in near San Diego, but I'm hoping to go about 2.5 years from now, when I'm right before I turn 50. My plan is to go to Disneyland.
We are making plans now to go to Disneyland Paris.
Ooh,
nice!
Very jealous.
You know, somebody's going to be living on the other side of the world soon, so it'll be super easy for me to get to Paris.
Yes. Oh, we're gonna be jealous. So just keep us posted with the pictures. We're gonna live vicariously through you. All right. So any final thoughts on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
Well, I did want to mention there's a couple more things in Disney World that are Snow White related I wanted to make a mention to. One is what's both in Disneyland and Disney World, but I do think one of the best moments of the show Fantasmic is when the Evil Queen makes her transformation. It's kind of cool in that show where you'll actually have two different performers that pull that off, where you have a big flash of lightning, Evil Queen goes through a trap door in the bottom, and then the hag comes in from the same door. But also, you know, if they do if you watch the YouTube videos, you know, with trap doors and stuff like that that can malfunction, they do have a catch where if for some reason the trapdoor doesn't work, you know, in the potion that she makes, she talks about making her hair like silver or white or whatever. So the Evil Queen under her kind of main uniform has a white wig on that she can just take off her
one uniform and then the same performer can quote unquote make that transformation. It's not as great a visual, but it's still something, even if the trapdoor goes wrong. And the other thing, and this I don't think was open when you did your trip, Andy, but in the at the Wilderness Lodge in the restaurant, they Artist Point, they now have, it's called Storybook Dining, and it's Snow White themed. They basically reskinned the restaurant, which was like a, they used to sell kind of Pacific Northwest type cuisine, like salmon and stuff like that. But they reskinned the restaurant, put in some iridescent trees that sparkle and stuff like that. And it's a character meal.
Wow.
And the characters are really fun. You get Snow White, which you can see in a lot of other places. But then you also get Dopey. Which that's the only place in Disney World that you can meet Dopey. You get Grumpy, and that's the only place you can meet Grumpy. And then at the end, you take your photo. You have a photo op with the Evil Queen herself. And we did this last Christmas, and it was excellent. The character interactions were amazing. Like, the Evil Queen was hilarious and making fun of everybody. Like, they did the silly dance and the silly song, and Dopey and Snow White and Grumpy were dancing around with each other, and the Evil Queen just had the biggest, like, disgusted look on her face while she was watching them dance around. And you know, Grumpy's really acting very grumpy and didn't want to dance, but finally they talk him into it. So the character interactions were amazing, and the food is actually kind of themed towards the movie as well. And it was you know, I mean, with your Disney character buffets, you're usually not thinking high quality cuisine, mac and cheese, chicken tenders, that type of thing. But this I thought was a step above, where they had a butternut butternut squash soup, which was delicious. And for dessert, you received a gift from the Huntsman, and it was a it came in like a little jewelry box, and you opened it up. And smoke came out of the jewelry box, and it had some caramel popcorn you would eat, and then it had a little candied heart inside of the box that was kind of like a gelatin that you would eat as well. So I thought it was a tremendous meal.
That sounds well worth
it. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a one credit meal. If you're on the dining plan, which I'm actually shocked they haven't made it a two credit meal yet.
Oh, for sure.
So I think, you know, if you are on the dining plan or looking at a character meal, if you're in Disney World, that's certainly one I would highly recommend.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like fun. It was not, because I planned everything to a T on my trip, and that was not
same.
We only did end up doing one character meal. Well, no, we did one breakfast. We did 1900 Park Fair. I know we did that for our first night there. And like you said, like how great in character they are. There's the Lady Tremaine, right?
You did the
Cinderella.
You did the breakfast or dinner?
We did the dinner.
Yeah, the dinner is great with the stepsisters and Lady Tremaine.
Yeah, yes, we're a character. And there's actually, I saw a video, though, of it was at the Magic Kingdom, the Evil Queen, and how in character. I mean, if you're an actress, say, and you live in Central Florida and you're playing it, that must be so much fun just to have a new audience every day and just be such a, lack of a better term, such a bitch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, she loved it. Like when we got our picture with her, you know, we got the picture with the boys, and then they were like, oh, the whole family get in there for a picture. And, you know, I was kind of like fumbling around with the autograph books and stuff like that. And she actually did sign, which I thought was interesting, because a lot of the villains will not sign, but Evil Queen did sign, which I was appreciative. But just like with me fumbling around with the autograph books, she was acting so annoyed. And I mean, she really hammed it up, even with like me and Jennifer, which I appreciated. And Caden loved it. You know, Carson, when we went, was still like 1.5, so he doesn't remember that. But Caden does still talk about going to eat with Snow White, and really enjoyed it. He really enjoyed the interactions with Dopey. Dopey was great as well. So that was just an awesome meal.
Well, that's a great tip for me next time I go to Disney and stay on property to definitely check that out. Miranda, any final thoughts? Also, we also talked about there is a little bit of a presence at Epcot with the mm-hmm. Germany Pavilion, and we spoke about that since it is set in Germany. So there's probably you can get knickknacks or tchotchkes or whatever there.
Yeah. Right,
Miranda. Any final thoughts on Snow White?
So to quickly piggyback off of the stuff that Chad told you guys about, when you read the synopsis and you're trying to decide if you're going to go to the Fantasmic show, like we almost didn't go, totally worth it. Character, breakfast, dinners, any of those, it doesn't matter if you're just going as a couple or your kids are older. Again, totally worth the experience. The food is fantastic, right down to even the ones that just have chicken tenders. Like every bit of food I ate at Disney was amazing. So I highly recommend like checking those out, even though you read the synopsis and you're like, I don't think that's for me. That they're phenomenal. They're worth the time to watch the show and at least enjoy one character meal, whether it be a dinner or breakfast. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, especially, you know, because you have the tried and true Chef Mickey's, which everybody does a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We did, in 2006, we did the princess lunch at Akershus. In the Norway Pavilion.
Akershus, nobody knows how to pronounce
it. Right. Akershus, whatever
you want. Akershus. Do you remember Snow White was at that?
I'm trying to remember. I know we got a picture with someone. I think it was Ariel when we first walked in. And I remember Aurora, Mulan. I'd have to go back through the pictures. But Snow White might have been there.
Yeah, because we did it last year in one of our trips for breakfast, and Snow White was one of the princesses that was on there. I mean, they generally have a rotation, so it's not she's not like guaranteed.
I believe I believe the only one that princess they would at the time, this 2006, would not allow in the rotation was Cinderella, since she had her own character meal.
Okay. And they usually tell you when you book the character meal, they can usually tell you who the characters are. Like we did the Beach Club Resort for Caden's birthday breakfast, just the three of us. And that was Goofy, Minnie, and Donald.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night for dinner, because we went with other family, so the whole group of us, all eight of us, went to the Crystal Palace. And that was Tigger, Pooh, Eeyore, like the whole gang. That was,
lots of fun. Yeah. Awesome.
It was, it really was.
So, great show, guys. I think we're off to a good start with our little series here. So, our next episode, which hopefully we're going to try to do these monthly, even if somebody is in another hemisphere, when we record, but we will make sure we find the time. So next on the docket is 1940s Pinocchio. So I'm looking forward to that. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. I don't think either of my children have seen the original animated movie. But I think I tried to show Jessica Bambi as a kid, and she was really little. We couldn't even get past the thunder lightning storm scene. She got so scared. I said, you know what? I'm going to cut my losses here. So there's a few blank spots for my kids, so hopefully I'll get them to watch it. Chad, now you're a little ahead of where we are in your watch, correct?
Yes. So, I am through. Well, once you revealed that this little podcast was happening, I pumped the brakes on where I was with us watching it chronologically. So we kind of moved to the Pixar thing, but with the animated proper, we are up to Bambi, which is our fifth one. So not too far ahead, but I'm looking forward to Pinocchio, and just a teaser for that podcast. That was one that, you know, I talked about how nostalgic I was with Snow White. And by the way, before we close, I did want to mention, you know, like, I mean, Snow White as a movie, I mean, some facets of Snow White are certainly facets of the time in 1937, where she basically tells the dwarves like she can wash their clothes and clean to earn her worth. But I do think we'd be remiss if not just mentioning that You know, the Huntsman nor the Prince are even named. They don't have
They are just the Prince and the Huntsman.
So they are very generic one-note characters. And Snow White and the Evil Queen, you know, even though Evil Queen doesn't necessarily have a name besides Evil Queen or the Old Hag, certainly have much more dimensionals to that. And I think that's impressive that they had two very strong female characters in what was their first feature length film. But so I wanted to certainly get that point in, as I definitely caught that when rewatching that was impressive, you know, that they certainly went that way in 1937. You don't really see that as a female lead dominated time period, I guess.
It was definitely an additional. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's definitely an additional, you pointing that out, like we were talking about much earlier in the show, the gambles he took, it was definitely another kind of gamble, because that could have not perceived well, you know, at the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's also going to be, like it was a great point, Chad, that this is going to be a kind of a snapshot of the times, because of what we will see in some of these movies. There is a movie that we will probably won't be covering on this because it's hard to find and it's never going to be released per Bob Iger, I believe. So, but you know, you have other movies like Dumbo and this and such that have depictions, stereotypes, or whatever. Yeah. Pinocchio, Peter Pan, even. So we will touch on that. We're not going to get too political or too deep in that, but we're mostly here to talk about the movies as art, as something we watch as families and all that stuff. So we're going to try to keep with the positives, but we are not going to shy away from some of the, let's just say, faults mm-hmm. of some of these films. So, you know, just putting it out there, you know, we're finding our way. So, you know, I think we're off to a solid start. So, before we go, let's kind of just talk about where everybody's got. Chad, I forgot to mention at the top of the show, but you co-host Wrestling Warzone over on the PWN Wrestling feed. You got anything on the horizon with that show?
We're hoping to record next week. That would be In Your House 6. So we're kind of really on the road to WrestleMania 12 now with that show after that pay-per-view happens. So I'm looking forward to actually having rewatched it for the podcast. So it's been a while since I watched that show, and I'm looking forward to rewatching. There's a Shawn Michaels versus Owen Hart match that I remember really liking. So hopefully that holds up. And like I said, we're targeting recording that sometime in the next week, so hopefully soon. We're trying to target maybe about 2 episodes a month for that show.
Awesome. Miranda, what's going on over on the Jenny position? You got any Geek and Sassy? And I think you mentioned the Sassies are coming soon?
Yep, the Sassies are coming soon. They are the best award show ever, and the only award show to ever take place, I believe, on the Place to Be Nation. I could be wrong. Somebody, if I'm wrong, tell me. Anyway,
I'm not gonna tell
you. Yeah, we're over on the Jenny position now, but we have our own little award show, and we give every year. I think this is our 4th year doing this. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like the Oscars or the Emmys or People's Choice. We have a bunch of different categories. We throw them out there to the general public and say, give me your nominations, and then I do the ballots. If there's a tie, I'll have Jenny, like, toss it on Twitter or something and be like, hey – it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And I do know our next episode will be one of our read streams and downloads episodes. So we'll be talking about kind of like what we've been reading and watching and listening to podcast wise. That's not our own, over the holidays. So we have got that.
All right, great. As for me, I just recorded an episode of Laughing Theater with Mr. Matt Souza. We watched Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. It was a lot of fun. Matt's a good dude. Also, I have more episodes coming. I have Tim Capel. We're going to watch Groundhog Day on his second appearance. And the Godfather, Nate Milton, will be making his first appearance. And we're going to watch Black Dynamite. So look for those episodes coming soon. As well as a few pop specials. We have an In Memoriam 2019. We're going to look back at the famous people we lost this past year. And that's going to be myself, Scott Criscolo, Tim Capel, and hopefully the conscience of Place to Be Nation will be joining us, Steve Willey, as well as Miranda, you and I, and your partner, Jenny Smith, as mm-hmm. well as possibly Andrew Reich, and a new voice, a debut that night. He's one of our writers from the site, Paul Bernardo, will be making his podcast debut. We're going to be previewing the Oscars that mm-hmm. we just had the nominations announced. So I'm sure we all have a lot to say and a lot of predictions, which probably we're going to be wrong on. But I remember last year's show was a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to recording again. And also, speaking of looking forward, we have Looking Forward, Looking Back coming. We have a few episodes. We have the fall-winter movie wrap-up with Miranda and Jenny and Tim and Scott. And we also have, we're going to do a live watch on an episode of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. That is my prize for winning last year's Summer Movie Wager. And look for that episode coming as well. That'll be, though, won't be till March. But
it's not a bird movie.
It's not a bird movie. Snow White is not a bird movie. Yes. Chad's sitting there going, what is wrong with you people? We talking about birds. It's a little looking forward, looking back.
Let me just hope the next time you guys make a wager, somebody's not dumb enough to think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is going to be the second grossest movie, and you won't subject us all to Scott Pilgrim then. If somebody
I was trying
makes...
to subject everybody to the new Artemis Fowl movie that got pushed back and isn't even out yet. So there's that.
Okay.
Well, somebody cut him his big mouth, so he's going to do a live, going to do a pop goes to movies with you. So
he promised.
He did.
Promised.
And it's on live tape, recorded, whatever. So yes. He has to hold to it. But anyway, so check out all the feeds. Check out the wrestling feed that Chaz feature on, the pop feed, which the show is on that you're listening to, and the Jenny Position, which has Jenny, Miranda, Tim, all kinds of fun shows over there. Go to placemanation.com. New articles every day. Go to our social media pages. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. The Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament is going on. We're currently in the second round already. We are now picking up speed. So 4 matchups a day. Like the page. You'll see the matchups every day. But until then, we're going to close the book on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We'll see you in the next episode talking about Pinocchio. For Miranda Berthold and Chad Campbell, I am Andy Afton. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Pop Goes the Classics, and we'll see you next time.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobenation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.